Welcome to Book Talk for Book Talk, a podcast where we deep dive into the writing of your favorite novels.
This season, we're exploring Sarah J. Maas's first installment in the Crescent City series. This is Jack.
And I'm Amy. This is part two of this week's episode.
The views expressed by the hosts are entirely their own and in no way represent the thoughts or intentions of the original author.
This podcast is a discussion shared to spark thought and conversation on the characters and themes of this novel.
The interpretations presented in this podcast are just a few of the many possibilities. Listeners are encouraged to read along and share their own analysis of the text.
Though the hosts speak mostly within the constraints of this book, series and extended universe spoilers may be discussed with or without warning.
Explicit language, as well as themes of sex, violence, abuse, depression, self-harm, and death will recur throughout this podcast. Listener discretion is advised.
So, back onto the main line and away from the tangent of green carpet. Hunt is so freaking presumptuous this chapter, I want to kick him in the balls. It makes me so mad. And you made a good point at lunch, Jack, about the funness of it as a writing technique.
Yeah.
Which I'll let you talk about. But I still want to kick him.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
So at one point when he enters the gallery and Bryce sees him for the first time in person, quote, he waited for it, the realization of who he was, waited for her to shrink back, to fumble for the panic button or gun or whatever the fuck she thought might save her from the likes of him. But maybe she was stupid after all, because her answering smile was saccharine in the extreme. Well, Hunt, she doesn't need a gun because her smile's the weapon.
Right? I mean, even like his constant use of like, she's got balls. Even in my daily life, like no one uses balls like that. If you think about it, like you and I don't say like, I got real, like it's always kind of like a negative. Real balls on that one. Or like ballsy. Like we kind of, I don't know, we just don't really say that. Not that there's anything wrong with it, but it's also like balls are weak.
Yeah.
Uteruses and vaginas are hardcore.
Yeah, that's right.
You know what I mean? So it's like, but he says it a lot, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like, of course, Hunt right now is using like very, when he praises her, it's in very like male terms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And right now, the way that he calls her smile saccharine, right? And that's too sweet. It's mm-hmm. feminine, right? Mm-hmm. And now here we are, she's weaponizing the feminine. Mm-hmm. Her smile is so feminine that it's now too sweet and it makes him really uncomfortable. You know, again, like I said, women are expected to be charming and smiling. And the fact that Hunt waits for Bryce to fear him mm-hmm. is just, it's amazing.
Like, it gives me vibes from the first episode where Bryce was like, oh yeah, they thought I was hot.
Yeah.
But that would never happen.
Right?
It's the same idea. Like, she must be afraid.
Yeah, right? And also, like...
His is less justified. I don't know. Maybe it is justified. But he assumes that she's going to be afraid.
Yeah. I mean, like, I think you touch on this later, but, like, he's judged so much for being a fallen angel.
Yeah.
That he's, like, coming in hot, right?
Right.
Like, he was like, you're gonna judge me. You're going to come after me.
And I'm going to judge you first.
I'm going to be a dick to you. But as someone who weaponizes smiles all the time, like, I love the scene so much.
It feels very... you energy.
Yeah. It was, I do that so much of just like, I'm going to say something totally up the wall with the biggest smile on my face.
Yeah. Yeah. Another quote from Hunt and him being a judgy asshole or alpha hole. Quote, of course she was one of those aromatherapy zealots conned into handing over her marks for the promise of feeling happier or being better in bed or growing another half a brain to match the half she already had. Or maybe it's to help with her anxiety douche bag.
Right? As someone who burns, you know, the oils that we got?
Yeah.
With our crystals?
Yeah.
I burn it every Sunday as I do my nighttime routine and stuff. And it's just like, bro, it's attacking female joy.
Yeah.
That's what it is. When people mock crystals, when people mock astrology, mm-hmm. things that, you know, crystals and astrology have been around way before women have like taken it on, and these come from other cultures that, you know, we've absorbed. I understand and recognize that completely. But I also know that when you see guys on their dating profiles be like, don't fuck around with astrology, prefer real science. It's like, oh, so what you're saying is you'd rather not women be happy or find something that they like. And that's what's happening right now. And Hunt, stop it. Yeah. You're hurting my feelings. It's no, you're not. You're just making me want her to hate fuck you. And I think this kind of goes back to my, like, he's mad at her.
Yeah.
Like, this is lashing out.
Yeah.
But again, like, he has so many reasons to lash out with her that it all makes sense.
He does. But I think, like Bryce, he's in a situation where to form a relationship with someone is to create vulnerability. And he's already been damaged enough by that vulnerability.
Mm-hmm.
For Hunt, it was losing Shahar. For Bryce, it was losing Danica. So they're kind of in the same boat here, where whether or not they sense their mate connection or they sense, we keep talking about the mates thing, and that's not till book two.
Well, you know what? It's important.
Yeah.
It's, you know, like, this is one of those things that really is important. We're not talking about all the other things that happen in book two.
We tried really hard to not talk about mates for Feyre and Reese in book one. So I'm just wondering if it's a problem for this one.
I don't think so. Because book one didn't deal with Feyre and Reese as much.
That's true.
It was about Feyre and Tamlin.
Yeah. Yeah.
But this is all Bryce and Hunt.
Yeah.
So I think it makes sense to them. Right. We're not talking about, you know, all the other shit that goes on. Like, the one thing we're referencing is the mate stuff.
Yeah. So whether or not they actually sense some form of a mating bond, there is at least attraction and there is some similarity between them. And if they're not willing to be vulnerable and they're not willing to experience loss anymore, it makes sense then to be as much of a dick as possible to get this person away from you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's what we do in middle school. Like, I really like this person, but I don't know how to like this person and I don't want to get hurt. So I'm just going to be an asshole.
I mean, it's middle school, child, like elementary school. Like, this is very childish.
It's pushing the person you like on the playground. Like, beat them up. Makes the most sense. And I have in my notes, he feels the pull. let me read this quote. Quote, Hunt would admit it. Males would do a lot of fucked up things for someone who looked like Bryce. Like, and it's just said in passing.
It's said in passing, and it's so, like, third, like, removed.
Uh-huh.
Right? Like, not me. Males.
Yes. Right.
And
exactly.
And he's not even saying Bryce. No, he says her.
He says her. I put in Bryce for the sake of context. But
it's so removed. Like,
yeah. It is extremely removed.
But
it's there.
Yeah, he's trying. He's trying not to be attracted to her ass that he keeps checking out. And, like, he's also, like, and he's just, like, straight up mad for that pool, you know? Like, that he's getting dragged along. And, like, he was dragged along with Shahar. And now he's getting, you know, drawn to Bryce. And it's, like, he's holding vigil, too, for Shahar.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's more than just, like, oh, I've been burned once. But it's, like, this was the love of my life.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I will never find another.
Yeah, and we're going to see it in this chapter, but also throughout the novel, how anytime Hunt is fighting his attraction to Bryce because, you know, he's already had the love of his life, he's going to recall Shahar. He's going to recall the rebellion because that is how he keeps his walls up. That's how he's going to keep Bryce out, is remembering this tragic thing he partook of that resulted in his slavery.
Yeah.
Wow. What a turn on.
I mean, it's all red flags. He's a red flag.
Mm-hmm.
Red's my favorite color.
You are wearing red.
Yeah, I'm wearing red right now. And red's not my favorite color. It's pink. But, like, you know, red flags are basically pink.
And red is your favorite album.
It is my favorite album. What I love about these chapters is what SJM is doing right now with her writing technique. And she wants us to know what Hunt and others assume about Bryce. And she wants us to know the truth about that immediately.
Mm-hmm.
So there, we don't even get a heartbeat of, like, oh, Bryce is partying again. No, we find out immediately. She's not partying.
Yeah.
But we also know that Rune thinks that she's still drinking.
Yeah.
She's not. And then the same thing here, where Hunt has this assumption that she's this party girl, or with the incense, right? Like, you're just like trying to smell things. Mm. And and then we realize, oh, it's for stress. Or he'll say something like, oh, I bet she doesn't even, you know, the scar, she's got it removed. And it's like, no, she's holding that. She's holding on to that scar, and it's really painful.
Yeah.
So I think there's a very specific reason why she's doing that. And I think it's because she wants the reader to know more, right? Like, we're kind of, she wants us to be more omnipresent. Like, mm-hmm. we have an idea of the different thoughts and stuff, and we know what's happening. But it's just one big trick, because we don't know anything.
Yeah.
But she's making us feel like we do.
Yeah.
And feel secure of like, oh, I know I've got everyone's number.
Yeah.
I know what's happening. That's like when we find out about Hunt's betrayal in the end.
Don't even get me started.
I was so thrown the first time I read that. I was like, what are we doing here, buddy?
Yeah.
And again, like, we're so confident so early on that we have all the facts.
Yeah.
That it hurts a lot when we don't.
Yeah. I completely agree with you. SJM does an extremely masterful job here of convincing us as readers that we know a lot more than we know, mm-hmm. and showing us how limited both Bryce and Hunt's points of view are, but then we forget it.
Yeah.
And we conveniently forget it, and she counts on us forgetting this. We assume our narrators and the points of view that we're seeing are the objective truth.
Yep.
And we're seeing that that's not the case. I mean, Hunt even thinks, quote, Hunt understood Bryce perfectly. It's obvious he doesn't. To your point, like, he thinks Bryce is extremely wealthy, and because she has this fancy apartment, can't even fathom that maybe Danica left it to her.
Right.
And like your point about the wound on her leg, like, he assumes she got it taken care of and removed because she has to look good in a swimsuit.
Mm-hmm.
And Bryce makes her own assumptions about Hunt as well. And why do we trust these two? Even more than that, why do we think they're even close to finding the killer as we go on this journey with them?
Yeah, they don't know shit. They don't know anything.
They make so many bad assumptions and so many wrong calls. Like, we're practically being warned from the get-go, like, this is going to be a long-ass journey, folks.
Don't trust these fools.
No, they're stupid.
They're incapable. Detective dumb and detective ass.
Yeah, seriously. Which one's... Oh, Bryce's ass.
Yeah, she is. Well, it's really sad, though, because, like, you know, all these miscommunications, it comes from a deeper place, too, right? Like, it reflects mm-hmm. more about themselves than it does about the other person.
Yeah. Yeah. You're absolutely right. I mean, and that's something I've had to learn a lot in life, is that when someone's upset at you or insults you for something, it really is a reflection of their own insecurities in a lot of ways.
Oh, yeah.
And I think we see that with Hunt and Bryce. You know, he criticizes her for her appearance. And it's not that Hunt thinks he's unattractive, but I think the fact that he's a slave mm-hmm. really, really gets to him. And he's like, well, why would even a half-human like Bryce, who is attractive, want to be with a slave like me? Right? Because they are attracted to each other.
Yeah. And he talks about his tattoos. And he waits for her to comment on his tattoos, mm-hmm. to look too long, to say something rude. That, like, which is interesting, because I feel like he says something like, you know, the comments and the whispers.
Mm-hmm.
But haven't we already established that no one would ever say anything to the Umber Mortis?
Yeah.
That's all. Just that question. But, you know, he's waiting for, at the very least, that look of horror, right?
Yeah.
And he never gets that, right? Because Bryce doesn't care.
Right.
And she's also too busy being in her own, like, world of hurt and pain.
Well, and she's not one to judge slaves. She works with Lahaba, who is a slave.
Right.
She frees Syrinx, who was a slave. Like,
and she's indebted to Jezebel.
Yeah.
Like, she talks about being in so much debt, she can't even leave her job.
Right.
So she's not a slave, but she's not free.
Right.
Herself. Even though we have, like, both insecurity on both parts, right? Mm-hmm. There's still these moments of respect that kind of weasel through, and you can tell that he's, you know, that he's interested in Bryce. You know, like, he says, quote, a girl used to being answered and obeyed. And it's like, oof, you know, he wants to obey. And, you know, like, he respects that she doesn't look away. He respects that she is unhurried when she walks around to the desk, and that she just seems generally unbothered. And at the end of the day, like, what he's doing is so unbelievably sexist at the same time.
Yeah.
Like, and it's like, I'm willing to redeem you, Hunt, but you're making this so hard.
Yeah.
For this journey.
He does make it hard because how can you, I ask this question, but at the same time, I'm like, wait, maybe I've done this. How can you be so attracted to someone and so nasty to someone at the same time?
Easy.
Yeah, I was like, oh, wait, no, I've done this, definitely. But he has a hard time fighting that attraction because although anytime he recognizes his attraction and then he hates on her for a bunch of paragraphs, he always comes back to the attraction. Mm-hmm. When Bryce walks away from him, quote, Bryce's hips swished like she knew precisely how spectacular her ass was. It's one of my favorite lines. And I bring this up because I love that throughout all of this, there is no criticism of Bryce's size.
No. Or like, no.
Or body type.
Like, he doesn't even really call it out. He calls her gloriously curvy.
Yeah.
He calls her, you know, curves shapely for days, ass. Right? Like, shapely. Like, there's that, but it's more, there's nothing about like that, the roundness, the, you know,
yeah,
thickness of it. You know,
right,
what I mean?
Right.
Which, like, I do love that, you know, because he's just hungry for it.
Yeah.
You know, it's the little ones.
Yeah.
It's the little ones. You know, my mom like taught me growing up how to sway my hips while walking.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I should do it for you sometime, like to show you, like, because you have to think about it. But there was like, of course, that's a lesson my mom taught me where, yeah, it's like, yeah. She, you know, she was like, okay, put a book in your head and walk. Now put a book on your head, and this is how you're going to sway your hips to get attention if you you want to do that. Wow.
Thank you, Maria.
Thank you, Mom. You know what? I need to bust that out again. Enter my Bryce hip swishing era.
What Hunt refuses to acknowledge other than his attraction are the clues that Bryce is not what he assumes about her. As he's observing Bryce and their interactions, he thinks, quote, again, no sign or scent of fear. And it's not because Bryce is dumb. It's because she's learned to control it. And she's not as weak or as much of the susceptible prey as he thinks she is supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a hard left here that I don't know how to bring back to the conversation, but it's the last point I have before we go on to chapter 11. I want to point out, you know, Hunt's point of view of Bryce has been very limited, but Bryce's point of view is just as limited. And I'm going to actually turn it on Jessica. Bryce thinks, kind of with resentment, that, quote, Jessica sure as hell hadn't demonstrated empathy where Danica's murder was concerned when she'd ordered Bryce to get back to work or to be turned into a pig 2 weeks after Danica's death. Now, Jessica could have communicated this in a much better instance, but we know that Jessica, at the end of the novel, I mean, she's kind of a softie. She's a softie with a mean streak.
Mm-hmm.
She's a Tootsie Pop in my point of view. Crunchy on the outside, soft on the inside. From my point of view, that was actually Jessica giving Bryce some normalcy structure. And structure, which she desperately needed, because otherwise she was going to go off the deep end.
Yeah, I mean, I remember, like, when my dad died, I had to go back to school.
Yeah.
I didn't get like weeks off. I mean, it was during Christmas break, but like, you know, like I went back to school and everything. So
yeah
no, it's like a weird, you need structure to get your life back. But we'll go into this in the breadcrumbs because I know you said you have a theory about Jessica.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to throw mine out and then we'll tease it. But I'm convinced that she was hired to protect Bryce from the beginning.
Mm.
I think that all of these things are like she was assigned by someone.
Yeah.
To look after Bryce, and she cares about Bryce a lot. Like these ways, you know, the like even the way of like, oh, the Danica thing, right?
Yeah.
Where she
yeah.
describes it. Like she's trying to protect Bryce. She's trying to make sure that no one
messes with her.
And like, you know, she is a softie with all the threats. Like, you know, like none of it ever really pans through with Bryce. But
yeah
so I have a theory that Jesper was sent in.
All right.
Yep. Yep. Going into chapter 11, I know this is a breadcrumb, but I want to start with it anyway because I'm a rebel. Quote, Bryce scanned the gallery for the 10th time, confirming that all was in place, the art dust-free, any contraband stored below. It's the sword.
It's Danica's sword.
And the reason why it's so important is because in this chapter, I'm going to talk a lot about Micah and Bryce meeting for each other. for the quote unquote first time in the place where she will kill him.
Yeah.
So all of it is like being bookend right now.
Yeah. SJM does an amazing job. And I think it's called a chiasm. And I think I've talked about this in past seasons, but this is actually, I think, a thing in Hebrew as well. As it's also a thing in like ancient Mayan and Aztec art where things work. I'm doing hand motions and I know the listeners can't see them. The parallels are not only paralleled, but they work in sequence. So you have A, B, C, C, B, A.
Okay.
And so what happens in order towards the middle of the story happens in reverse order at the end of the story. So you're always, and it's a really masterful thing that she's doing because we're seeing that here, right? Mm-hmm. Right now, we're seeing Micah and Bryce interact in the gallery. We're going to say this at the end. Earlier, we saw all the information about the drop. Mm-hmm. After Bryce kills Micah, she's going to perform the drop.
Yep.
And so we're seeing a lot of that same idea happening in this novel, and SJM does it so well.
Yeah.
As Jack says, we quote-unquote meet Micah Domitus for the first time. He is the perfect predator. Quote, horrifically, indecently gorgeous. Micah Domitus's brown eyes devoured her. His power pressed against her skin, ripped the air from the room, her lungs filled the space with midnight storms, sex and death entwined. He is seductive and he is dangerous. And we are reminded of Bryce's humanity because she's susceptible to it. And then my only other thought is, like, obviously he can't be trusted. Like, if he is this sexy and this close to death, bringing death.
Yeah.
He's a problem. He can't be trusted.
But, like, what if it was just one time?
But it's not. I know. It's funny to me, though, that we get a glimpse of how the archangels, not only Micah, but all archangels, are ultimately no better than the rest of the citizens of Midgard. Quote, there was no predicting where the extra strength that separated archangel from angel came from. Sometimes it was passed on, usually upon the careful breeding orders of Asteri. Like, the archangels are bred like animals, just like everybody else. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was an interesting tidbit to bring up.
I love it because it's humbling him. Mm-hmm. You know, like, we get a big immediate moment of, like, you know, Bryce is overwhelmed. Like, this is Micah. This is the archangel. This is the person that we've described as, you know, the law and, you know, godlike. And so here we are really seeing him. And we have to have that moment of humanity in a way of, like, he can be killed.
Yeah.
He is not God. He is not infallible. And that, again, this is kind of coming down to why it's going to make sense that Bryce can kill him. Mm-hmm. And I think even the way that he's introduced in this, we get a clear sense that his wings are white.
Yeah.
Perfectly white. Bryce, she's wearing a white dress.
Mm. Yes, great point.
They're equals.
Yeah.
In their own way. And she's going to fight tooth and nail, and she will beat him, and it will make sense because he is not God. He is just, he's just another Vanir.
Yeah. And even though they're quote unquote immortal, they're not true immortals. They are capable of dying.
Exactly.
There's a specific quote as Micah enters the room and then Hunt follows after him. And we're seeing this all from Bryce's perspective. And I want to get your thoughts on this because I can read this in so many different ways. Mm-hmm. Quote, Hunt Athalar lingered, holding Bryce's gaze before he glanced at her collarbone, as if Micah's feather had left a mark where it touched her. The tattoo of thorns across Hunt's forehead seemed to turn darker. And just like that, that scent of sex rippling off the archangel turned to rot.
I have thoughts.
Okay, please tell me.
So the way that I read this, like, again, knowing what we know, is that this is, like, absolutely the mating bond happening. That, you know, when Bryce sees Micah, she's like, holy crap, I drew, like, I had photos of him when I was in high school. Like, you know, she had a crush on him. He is sex. And then the way that the feather draws on the collarbone, that's on purpose. They're so aware of what they're doing, right, with their wings. And, you know, she's like super turned on in that moment. And then she sees Hunt. And I like to think that that's like, you know, his crown gets darker. That's him being upset.
Mm.
And then it smells like rot. Mm. And now her body's instantly like, oh, I've just upset my mate. No, like I'm not attracted to this person.
Okay, I'm glad I'm not the only one, because I felt the same too.
Okay, cool, cool. Which means you're right.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's
two out of two, it say.
Two and two must be true.
Yeah.
No, I mean, it's totally a breadcrumb if that's the case, if that's what SJM was trying to do.
Yeah. I can't wait for our listeners to be like, you fools.
Y'all are wrong.
Yeah. But I think that it's a really good example of, you know, when you know what you know, that they're mates, it is the most obvious, clear thing ever that I can't even begin to think what my brain thought.
Yeah.
When I first read this, right? Because it's like, was she like, how did she not write that and be like, oh, is this too obvious?
Well, I could almost read it as where Bryce scented sex with Micah, the smell of rot actually comes from Hunt.
Hunt. Okay, I can see that.
So I can see how that
might be interpreted.
Is a really fine line.
Yeah.
And it's only by knowing what we know
that we're like, ah, yes.
That we're like, oh, this is what's happening.
But I can see that. Yeah. If this is like your first read, then that would be a really understandable way of interpreting that.
Yeah.
So, you know, Bryce lets them all in, right? Micah arrives. She's like, all right, boys, come on inside. And Hunt is the last to go in, and she shuts the door, nearly hitting his feathers. And his eyes, quote, his black eyes flashed with warning. She gave him a smile to convey everything she didn't dare say. I've faced worse than you.
Mm-hmm.
Weaponize it, babe. Weaponize it.
Yeah. What I like about that, this is later in my notes, so I'll jump, but it's, I read the same quote, so I'm just going to bring it up now. What I like about that is that Bryce isn't falling into the expected power dynamics between a half-human mm-hmm. and a legionary angel, regardless of whether Hunt is fallen or not, regardless of whether he's the Umbra Mortis or not.
Mm-hmm.
Bryce is not acting the way a half-human should be acting in this moment.
Yeah, it kind of gives me a, because he's playing with her vibes.
Mm.
He's playing back, right? You know, like she's doing the smiling thing at him and then he'll smirk back at her and they're like making these eyes. He's the only one engaging.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, so it's like it's almost, you know, for the first time since Danica, here's a veneer that she is not even aware of her own half-humanness.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Thank you.
And I think he enjoys it because it challenges him,
mm-hmm.
which he doesn't get a lot of.
Yeah, he calls it sparring later. He has fun.
Yeah, he is having fun.
Chihuahua Hunt makes friends.
I want to call out something about Bryce's point of view that we learn here, because it really not only aligns her with Hunt in a way that they both don't realize right now, but it really justifies everything Bryce will do throughout this entire series. I think it's when Bryce sees the SPQM tattoo. She thinks about this. Senatus Populusque Midgard, and I pronounce that terribly, and I have no apology. The Midgard Senate and people. Total fucking bullshit. As if the Senate was anything but a puppet ruling body. As if the Asteri weren't their emperors and empresses, ruling over everything and everyone for eternity, their rotted souls regenerating from one form to the next. So Bryce already knows, and like this must be common knowledge on some level,
mm-hmm.
that government is fake.
Yep.
Asteri are dictators.
Yep.
And we're just slaves to the system.
Yeah.
And for us to know that about Bryce, that she's not submissive mm-hmm. to this government. She's just making the best out of the situation that she's in.
Yeah.
Is really important for why she's willing to do what she's willing to do throughout the novel. And I wanted to point that out.
No, I think I'm happy you pointed out. It adds that level of it's bigger than just them.
Yep. But, you know, Micah, he's here to be dominant. And he's going to let his dominance be known. So there's some fun food is power stuff here. And it's not food is power in ways that we've seen it. It's not food is power in like who's controlling the food. Mm-hmm. Well, it is. It's a combination. Never mind. It's a combination of controlling food, but also people being food. So it's all fun. First off, when Micah refuses a beverage for himself at Bryce's offer, she doesn't even get to offer to Hunt and Isaiah. Micah automatically shoots it down that they will not have any. Because they're slaves, they don't get to have an opinion. Micah also stares at Bryce, quote, like she was a steak and he was something that ate steak. Raw and moaning. And I love that double entendre.
Right? I was like, is it sexual or is it it's moaning super, in pain?
Well, it could be...
It could be both.
It could be both.
Yeah.
Because, you know, sometimes when we talk about steak and it's raw, and it's like, I can still hear it mooing.
Yeah, no, exactly.
It's the same idea.
It's like you're eating a live creature.
Yeah.
Or you're... Eating a live creature.
Right, right. Or I was thinking, but you know, that too. You can bleep that one.
Yeah.
Toward the end of the chapter, Micah will call Bryce, quote, tempting, as if she were a piece of dessert on a platter. And, you know, that's the ultimate sign of power.
Absolutely. Because food is what?
Power.
Power. We're introduced to Jessica. And like Bryce, Jessica's described in very feminine ways, right? Like, sure, she's even described as youthful, right? Mm-hmm. This woman, this legend, you don't even realize what you're imagining until they describe her. And you're like, was not imagining a blonde with a bob.
Yeah, like, yeah. That was not what I had in my head.
Yeah. They make it clear that she has, like, two male lovers with her that she travels with. I love Jessica. Yeah. I love Jessica.
Yeah.
We need more Jessica.
Yeah.
And I think that we have a moment where we see that Micah's met his match, mm-hmm. which is, again, super important because Jessica's a nobody.
Right.
I mean, she's a powerful enchantress, but he is the governor, right? Like, he's in charge of everything. And here, Jessica is actually setting a standard and setting the precedent for Bryce that Micah is just a man to be taken down a few pegs.
Yeah. Great point.
Thank you.
She's the mentor. Unfortunately for Bryce, throughout all of this, she's just trying to keep her shit together. And we know from Hunt's point of view that he can't really scent any of this, which to me explains why he keeps watching her. Because he keeps trying to be like, are you scared yet? Or are you just dumb? Like, do you understand what's going on? Now, Bryce tries to keep an air of calm so that she can keep her whatever's going on physiologically under control. Maybe that gives her a sense of safety, but, you know, to each their own. Quote, Bryce kept her face neutral, even as she felt Hunt watching her carefully, as if he could hear her heart thundering, scent the sweat now coating her palms. But Bryce gave him a bored look in return. I think it's funny because Bryce assumes Hunt can smell her.
Mm-hmm.
Hunt cannot smell her. All Bryce can do to get control of the situation is to look bored. She's just masterful.
She's great. She's great. And, you know, when we go into chapter 12, we're still in Hunt's point of view. And this is when Micah's left the big old mic drop, right? Danica was killed by someone else, and that murder is still out there. Rather than being in Bryce's mind, understanding what she's going through, we see it through Hunt's eyes, right? And I think this is done on purpose because I think SJM knows that she had Hunt go too hard on Bryce by calling her stupid, by pointing out all these things, that now he's the one who's in the room saying, oh, her not moving is a really big tell.
Yeah.
I can't smell anything. I can't tell anything, but I know that she's really upset right now.
Yeah.
And, you know, if there's anything that we love more, it's a man who notices things.
It's true.
And how quickly we have forgiven him for being a dick. Because it's like, oh, you saw that she wasn't happy about her very obvious thing that she wouldn't be happy about? Take me now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of warning signs against Micah. And it's not obvious as a first-time reader that Micah is the antagonist. He seems like he's going to be a problem. He's going to be a shitty guy to deal with, but he doesn't. Is he the ultimate bad?
I was in denial.
I don't think we can tell that.
Yeah.
what's important, regardless of what you believe about Micah at this point of time, is that he's out for himself.
Mm-hmm.
And how do we see that? His need to catch the killer, regardless of who the killer is, quote, "Of course it wasn't about catching a deadly killer. No, this was pure PR." Micah ultimately needs to protect his image. It happens to be the case that he's the one causing the problem to impact his image. Either way, he has to protect his image. Because for him, it's about retaining power. And Hunt sees that. And that's what makes him hate Micah even more. The summit itself, which is coming up in a few months, or in a month, gives the illusion of power. Quote, "Hunt had been through plenty of other summits in Pangera with rulers who all pretended they had some semblance of free will." If you think about Micah searching for the horn, if you think about Hunt and as the Umbra Mortis, if you think about Bryce and her hunt for the killer, everyone in this book, from my point of view, is motivated by the desire to have some freedom to make their own choices. And I stand by that, even though Bryce is maybe the most free out of all of them. I think she's shackled just as much as Hunt and Micah are.
I mean, she's shackled by her free party girl image.
Yeah. Yeah. And by her guilt.
Yep.
And by Danica's memory.
Yep.
There's a lot of things going on here.
There's this concept of free will. And when you have like the two protagonists who are the most tied up, like we were just talking about, like, right, everyone's shackled. And they're shackled both like metaphorically and physically.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it goes into the theme that we mentioned, free will, because how much free will can you actually have if you were never free to begin with?
Yeah.
Again, it's this concept of what happens if your ruler, your ultimate creator of kind of sorts, was never good to begin with.
Yeah.
And you were never free to have a will. And we see just how messed up Hunt is by all of this. I think this sentence almost kind of goes under the radar. And when you think about like how hardcore of a killer he was and how detached he was, the fact that the idea of having to wear the formal armor, of having to wear the Asteri crest displayed across his heart, makes Hunt want to puke. And, you know, we talked about, you mentioned that, like, you know, bodily functions are normally reserved for very human.
Mm-hmm.
And here we are with that again, where it's like, oh, the only time, like, here's Hunt with a real body reaction, and that is very human of him.
Yeah, it is. It is a sign of weakness, and justifiably so, right? Because his oppressor, the same individuals he rebelled against,
is like, dress up pretty for me now.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He's their bitch.
Yeah. He's wearing armor that should be made, that should make you feel good and protected.
Yeah, and it's the exact opposite.
Mm-hmm.
What's really tragic to me is the fact that Hunt obviously despises Micah, doesn't really have a lot of respect for Micah, given, like, you know, the PR and the illusion of power, and hates Micah's guts and wants to kill him because Micah makes Hunt kill other people. Unfortunately for Hunt, Micah's motivations have to be Hunt's motivations because the alternative is Sandriel.
Yeah.
Quote, "The Archangel needed to look good in front of the powers that be, in front of Sandriel, who would report it all to the Asteri and their puppet Senate, especially if it cost Micah his position. And if she gained it for herself, what was the northwestern quadrant of Pangera compared to all of Valbara? And Micah losing everything meant his slaves, Hunt, Isaiah, Justinian, and so many others, went to whoever inherited his governor's title. Sandriel would never honor Micah's bargain with Hunt."
It makes you automatically root for Micah.
Yeah, because at least Micah is willing to let Hunt work for his freedom.
Yeah, like you don't want Hunt with Sandriel.
No.
So you're like, therefore,
Micah must be good.
Right? Yeah.
which is terrible.
Yeah, but it kind of like, but it's also genius writing where it's like, is. I'm going to make you root for him.
Yeah.
You want Hunt to only have 10 kills left.
Right.
You
right.
want Hunt to not be with his former lover's sister.
Right.
You know, like, there's a lot of reasons why you want Micah to win.
Right. Well, and there's a lot of reasons for Hunt to want Micah to win, even if Hunt wants to kill Micah.
Yeah.
And what a mind fuck is that?
I know. I feel that way, but rather than kill, I mean sex.
Yeah.
That's funny. I haven't been attracted to anyone in so long.
I'm sorry.
It's because I don't go outside and meet people. Micah, even though we're rooting for him, but not really rooting for him, he's in a weird place. Mm-hmm. But we know he's in a weird place because he's trying to play mind games with Bryce and Jessica. Because, like, within paragraphs, he drops the whole, like, Danica was killed by someone else thing. And then he drops the, oh, by the way, the new witch queen's coming. Did you hear about the other's death? Mm-hmm. Jess was like, yeah, I did, bro. And then he also brings in the fact that Sandriel is coming over to visit. Like, didn't even warn Hunt. And so, you know, like, this guy is an asshole.
And it's all about power for him.
Right? But we also get, like, this moment of similar to Bryce, who has this force bored expression, right? When she, like, learned about Danica, even though we know she's reeling. Mm-hmm. Hunt does something similar, right? He talks about having to suppress his own emotions. Mm-hmm. And he's like, I'll deal with this later. So basically, you're in a room with a lot of really healthy people right now.
Who are all really good at compartmentalizing.
Yeah, no, they're totally going to go home and then, like, journal about it and then work with their therapist and go through their feelings.
That's exactly right. So this is kind of a breadcrumb, but I want to point it out because it's sweet. And I say that, I think, facetiously. There's a moment when Bryce questions Micah, which he doesn't like, obviously, because he's powerful and dominant and his power rumbles through the room. Quote, no one took that kind of tone with an archangel, at least not anyone with nearly zero power in their veins. It was enough to get Hunt to set aside Sandriel's visit and focus on the conversation. And I thought it was sweet-ish because Bryce is getting herself into trouble and Hunt is like here having a panic attack. But wait, you know what? I can put that away and focus because you're putting yourself in trouble.
Right.
I just thought that was kind of cute. Yeah,
it is
sweet.
It is. And it's, you know, they mention it so many times that she doesn't have any power in her veins. I'm like, what do you imagine? What do they think her jump is going to be like? Her like going into a little puddle and then coming right back out?
Yeah,
like,
pretty much.
I did the drop.
Yay.
Yeah. Oh, and then there's the moment also where, like, Bryce asks about, like, well, what about the angel in the alley? And Micah is the one who's like, oh, he doesn't remember anything. And it's just, like, there's just so many clues about, like, the two of them. Mm-hmm. You know, like, that tension of when you find out the truth and you reread this. This book was never meant to be read one time.
No.
It's meant to be read many, many times.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely. And Esham is just appealing to her audience because she knows most of us reread her books.
We'll go through it with a fine-tooth comb. I feel like people didn't go through it with a fine-tooth comb until the second book came out.
Yeah, I agree.
And then they're like, oh, shit.
I gotta go back.
You mean you actually did think about this? Damn it.
Obviously. We're how many hours into this episode?
Right.
We learn a little bit about the Hind in this chapter, and I have to stop to appreciate Esham. The Hind's name is Lydia Servos. She is a deer shifter. Lydia means beautiful one, and we find out in book 2 in Sky and Breath that Lydia is, in fact, very beautiful. And Servos means deer. I forget what language. I apologize. And Hind means stag or male deer. And it's just a beautiful marriage of things.
Does it really mean stag? I always thought, like, I just kept imagining, like, hind legs.
No, I looked it up. Like a butt. I looked it up. And like, a heart is a doe. Remember, we learned that in ACOTAR? A hind is a stag.
Oh, because that makes so much more sense. Because, like, every time I kept being like, hind legs? Like, this doesn't make sense.
Or, and like, then I would booty.
Right? And then I changed it to hyena.
Oh, my goodness.
Don't ask me why.
Well, it's an interesting choice because she's obviously female. Mm-hmm. But hind and a stag.
Well, it's her persona.
Yeah. Antlers, more aggressive. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's very clever.
Yeah.
Despite his initial thoughts about Bryce, I'm convinced Hunt has begrudging respect for her by the end of this. I'm going to go back to the balls quote that Jack referenced earlier. Quote, Quinlan had balls. She was stupid and brash, but at least she had nerve. The combination, however, would likely see her dead before she completed the drop. Except, you know, he's going to be there to take care of it, and it's all going to be fine.
Light it up, Danica. Light it up, light it up, light it up.
I will say, though, the respect seems short-lived, because as soon as Hunt is over the threshold and outside the gallery, Bryce and Hunt are back at their tug-of-war for dominance. It ends with Bryce turning on the enchantments against Hunt and practically burning him so that he jumps out of the way and she closes the door on his face. And it is just emblematic of all the little power plays that they're going to have throughout their relationship. And it's just fun. And yeah. It's like sparring, just like Hunt says. And we enjoy it.
He eats the shit up.
He eats the shit up. She eats the shit up. I eat the shit up.
Oh, absolutely. And I just like, you know, it's not lost on us, guys, that, you know, a lot of these scenes take place at the actual threshold.
Yeah.
Before she lets them in or as they're walking in and out.
Yeah.
You know, like there's the fact that she's holding the door out and she gets that flash of pain mm-hmm. in her eyes and he sees it. And that's the true Bryce, like the fact that someone who's in pain. And but like, you know, quote, Bryce only smiled again as if she hadn't heard a damn word he said. Right. And it ends with her again, once again, weaponizing femininity.
Love it. All right. Last chapter. You made it. We made it. We're all proud here.
We're happy. We're enthused. Let's go.
Let's do it. We start this chapter with a beautiful description that I love because not because it's beautiful, but because it's very telling of the different characters and viewpoints that we're working with here. Quote, Hunt watched the late morning sunlight gild Micah's pristine white wings and set the strands of gold in his hair to near glowing as the archangel inspected the walled city sprawled around him. Hunt instead surveyed the flat roof, broken up only by equipment and the doorway to the gallery below. I never noticed it until I was writing my notes, but Hunt literally cannot see past what's in front of him. Whereas Micah is like looking into the distance, looking into the future.
He's planning.
He's planning.
Yeah.
Whereas Hunt is like, I can't even like.
I see trash.
Yeah. I see.
I talked to a girl today and I think I made a joke. Yeah. Dear diary, I laughed.
But it's really well done and you don't even think about it.
Yeah, no, it's great. It just shows who they are immediately.
Yeah. Yep.
You know what cracks me up about this scene too? Is that what just happened? They got out of a meeting with Jessica and Bryce. What happened in that meeting? I'm not going to say that Jessica handed their balls to them, but like it definitely didn't go the way that they thought, right? Yeah, like Jessica got this whole like paycheck thing.
Yeah.
She will
be invoicing them.
Exactly. You know, there was like sass happening and stuff. So, you know, there's a fair amount of, I wouldn't say it was an easy meeting. So where did they go immediately? On the roof of the building that they were just in, of the art gallery. They literally have to be on top of them, of the women, in order to have this discussion. They couldn't have flown somewhere else. It's such a risk. You think Jessica wouldn't have cameras up there?
Right. We know she has cameras everywhere.
Right? Like, it felt like Micah doing an immediate, like, power play. I'm going to piss all over.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree with you. It's like, well, we sure showed them. No, you didn't.
And then this is like the moment where Hunt tells us that like Micah's nickname for the city, like that they kind of refer to him as like a male of progress and tolerance. And then Hunt's like, I want to kill him.
Yeah. Hunt asks Micah if he thinks Quinlan can find whoever's behind the killings. Quote, Micah angled his head, an ancient lethal predator sizing up prey. I think this is a matter that requires us to use every weapon in our arsenal, no matter how unorthodox. First off, it's ironic that Hunt asks Micah this question and then observes Micah as a lethal predator. It's just a breadcrumb in my mind. And two, Bryce, aka humans, is viewed as an object or tool in this exchange and not even as a living sentient being. And again, it's like, Micah breathes and it's a power play.
Yeah.
We can't not talk about power when we talk about Micah.
Yep.
And that's all he does in this chapter as well. He makes the bargain with Hunt that if you find the killer, I will lower your death count to 10, which is a huge, huge thing. And Hunt knows he's being played, but he doesn't care.
Yeah, like what if there's a chance?
Yeah, exactly. He'd rather risk the chance and get played. Which is so sad. And he tells Hunt to abstain. He tells Hunt to not have sex. Quote, keep your dick in your pants and your hands to yourself, or you'll find yourself without either for a while.
You saw my note.
I did.
Go ahead. Say what you wrote.
So I wrote, too bad it's his wings that Hunt loses.
Versus his dick? Like, wait, what? I just, can you explain your note? Because I read that. I'm like, did you want him to have his dick? get cut off? Because I can't imagine you saying yes. That's why.
So we know this about angels, that it's the cruelest thing to take away their wings, because that's what they identify with.
And what's the cruelest thing to take away for a reader? Hunt's dick. You're vicious. You're cruel.
It doesn't get used this novel anyway.
No, but we think about it.
It must be aggravating for Hunt to see Isaiah, because Isaiah, and Hunt even recognizes this, plays the game really well, where Hunt has never been able to. And I really question how they are able to get along so well.
Mm-hmm.
Because here's the quote. Isaiah had always known how to play the game, how to stomach their protocols and hierarchies, how to dress like them, dine and fuck like them. He'd fallen and risen back to the rank of commander because of it. It wouldn't surprise anyone if Micah recommended that Isaiah's halo be removed at the next governor's council with the Asteri after winter solstice. Like, Isaiah is basically Hunt's antithesis. Mm-hmm. Yes, they're both fallen, but Isaiah is the golden boy and Hunt is not. And typically those two don't go well. So it's curious to me that they are capable of getting along.
So I feel like I can't tell if I've complained on the podcast or just to you, but I don't trust Isaiah. I don't trust him. I think he's going to betray. I mean, even like the quote that you were talking about, right? Like that he knows how to play the game. He knows how to fuck like them. Mm-hmm. Who's he fucked then?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like who has he slept with to get through to the top? Like he has completely and utterly given in.
Do you think he's fucked Micah?
Probably. He talks about Micah in a really like revering type of way. Mm-hmm. He tells Hunt that Micah like threw him another, and it's italicized, another big fucking bone just now. And like to me, that's like a big like don't trust him. Then later on, Hunt describes Isaiah as like having always been the best of them, of the mm-hmm. ones that fallen. Like he's putting Isaiah on a pedestal too.
Yeah.
And it just screams warning, betrayal.
Yeah, which we haven't seen yet, right?
Mm-hmm. And if nothing happens in the third book and this comes out, we're analyzing this one book. So, you know.
I actually think if Isaiah ever compromises himself to help Hunt, it says a lot. Because mm-hmm. we see how much of a golden boy Isaiah is. And that would show true friendship.
You're right. We can see here that SJM is doing a great job of setting something up.
Yeah.
Which direction it's going to go? Not a clue.
No idea.
There's a lot of effort here.
I wanted to point out a random detail. Hunt observes that there are thousands of sacred cypress trees that line the street, planted to honor the patron goddess Luna throughout the city. And I did not know that cypress trees represent everlasting life.
Oh.
Life after death.
Nice.
Yeah. And, you know, SJM doesn't pick her flowers or her plants willy-nilly.
Nope.
So just want to leave that tidbit there. So going back to something we said earlier in the episode, Hunt thinks back on Shahar and why he loved her. And he says it's because Shahar saw his worth and the worth of his friends. Quote, all of the 18th had been like that. Soldiers she'd selected not for their status, but their skills, their true value. And is this really the truth, or is this rose-tinted glasses on Hunt's part? Did she love him and his fellow angels who rebelled with them, or did she manipulate them for the sake of revenge?
I feel like it's safe to say manipulated for the sake of revenge. Like, it just screams mommy and daddy issues from Hunt. Like, yeah. You're going to validate me? I mean, this comes back to friend.
Yeah.
Make a joke. Validate me. Love me. Hunt's really lonely.
He is.
He's so lonely. And then eventually, I think in the second book, we get more of his origin story.
Yeah.
We won't touch on that here, but he has a tragic backstory.
Yeah.
And it makes sense that he was seeking something and was seeking something so desperately that he ignored all the obvious signs.
Yeah. Yeah. I will be curious. I feel like there's a lot we still don't know about Shahar that we're going to find out later.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's going to come out early in the third book. So we'll find out.
Yep.
We'll see. So we've seen at this point a lot of Hunt's motivations for finding this killer. He can reduce his death debt. and therefore potentially get his freedom sooner. And he can avoid potentially being owned by Sandriel if he keeps Micah in power. That seems like good motivation to me. Bryce would be smart to not get herself involved.
Yeah.
That's probably the better choice. However, she's fueled by the need for vengeance. The person who killed Danica is still at large, and therefore she must get this person. Quote, she'd find whoever had done this and make them regret ever being born. And yeah, she does follow through on that, but I still think she's making the wrong choice. It shouldn't be surprising to learn that Bryce is punishing herself for Danica's death, and that's why she needs to find the murderer. So at this point, we do learn multiple things. We learn, well, we already know that Bryce still has the pain in her leg from the night of the murders. It gives her all sorts of trouble. She never had it properly healed. We learn Bryce thinks about, but doesn't apply to any other jobs. You brought up the debt earlier, Jack, but I also think on some level, Danica got her this job. Danica's the one who connected her to Jessica.
Is that true?
Yeah, it's true.
Oh, okay.
On some level, does she stay here because of the connection to Danica?
Mm.
She has memories with Danica in this place as well.
Now I'm like, did Danica pay Jessica to keep her safe?
Right.
Well, also, then it's like, of course, then Jessica would be like, yes, let me make you more indebted to me so that you can't leave me.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Bryce also rereads Connor's text messages from the night of his death. Quote, it hurt more to see them, hurt enough to feel through every part of her body. So she always looked. And Bryce, when she's at her lowest, is even willing to open her audio mail and listen to Danica's laugh. Mm. And that's just so cruel. What's curious to me is that, you know, Hunt is in a bad situation that is the result of choices he made 200 years ago. Whereas Bryce is actively choosing to hurt herself. They're both hurting themselves, but hers seems more volatile to me.
Mm-hmm.
More of an active choice.
Yeah. I mean, like, literally, she's left poison in her leg.
Right, right. And it makes sense then, when she's constantly choosing to punish herself, she must also do the opposite to choose to find the killer, because mm-hmm. she's never been complacent.
Yeah. And finally, at one point towards the very end, Jessica tells Bryce to keep Hunt close, right? She didn't tell her to sleep with him, but it is funny where, like, you have Micah who's like, don't touch her. And mm-hmm. she's like, keep him close.
Yeah.
And Bryce doesn't like it, right? She says, quote, as if she were some little female in need of a big, strong warrior to guard her, even if it was partially true, mostly true, totally and definitely true. If that demon was being summoned again. Now, we're starting to see the human side. Remember, we started this episode of us saying she hasn't really mentioned her humanity.
Mm-hmm.
She hasn't mentioned this side of her, that she's kind of like the side that wasn't really able to save Danica. But here she is admitting her humanity. And I've been talking about linking the humanity with the femininity and, you know, the being the quote unquote weaker of it all. Right.
Yeah.
And we don't really see that because we see Bryce normally weaponizing her femininity. So here she is now accepting like, ah, shit, I'm going to need a Vanir to help me with this.
I'm going to need a man.
Big old strong man.
I'm going to need a Vanir.
Big strong Vanir.
And I'm going to need an angel.
I'm going to get pizza.
Go get me Pizza Hut.
Get me Pizza Hut. Little Caesar.
Here are our non-multiverse breadcrumbs for this week in Chapter 8. Quote, it was only during the drop that the flash of first light appeared, raw, unfiltered magic. It could heal and destroy and do everything in between. Just like it will heal Hunt and everyone around Bryce when she makes the drop at the end of the novel.
In the same chapter, quote, captured and bottled, the first glow of first light was always used for healing. Then the rest of it was handed over to the energy plants to fuel their lights and cars and machines and tech. Some of it was used for spells and some was reserved for whatever shady shit the Republic wanted, like feeding the Asteri. Just saying. Though I'm also sure the order Bryce lists is just propaganda and the majority goes to the Asteri.
That feels right.
Yeah.
In chapter 8. Quote, to make the drop alone was to die. You faced the very depths of your soul. Which is why we are afraid when Bryce makes the drop alone. And we find Danica at the bottom of her soul.
She's like, bitch, I've been here the whole time. Still in chapter 8, quote, even as some part of Bryce cringe at the tiny fact that she wouldn't receive any part of her commission on that piece that she sold to Maximus, on any art in Juspa's gallery, that money went elsewhere. Paying for the freedom of her little baby syrinx.
I think of him as a cat, but he's like a dog. More like a dog because he's, but
he's perfect. He's a combo.
He's a combo. He is a chimera.
Yeah.
Last one in chapter 8, quote, maybe Rune had crawled back into the fold. It'd be a shame, considering the shit that had gone down to pull him out of it in the first place. Not only is it alluding to the fact that Bryce actually cares about her brother, but also their messy past, which we'll learn more about in the future.
Moving into chapter 9, quote, one day Hunt would get that halo removed. Decades from now, possibly centuries, maybe he'd earn back his freedom in time to be old. He could potentially die free. You'll be free soon. And then you won't be. But like, you know, hopefully you'll be free again.
Hopefully you'll die free. In chapter 10, quote, had Bryce been full-blooded Fae, had her father claimed her as his offspring, she might have been subjected to such things like arranged marriage. Rune, especially with his starborn status, would one day have to submit to an arranged marriage when a young female deemed suitable to continue the precious royal bloodline came along. Foreshadowing arranged marriages for both of them. Yay!
Cormac. Also in chapter 10, quote, Hunt scanned the sandstone facade of Griffin Antiquities. Again, there was no way Jessica Roga wouldn't have cameras covered every inch, both outside and within. Convenient for later in the novel when Bryce and Micah go head to head.
Still in chapter 10, quote, she's here, Hunt said. The scent of her still lingered on the sidewalk, lilac and nutmeg and something else he couldn't quite place, like the gleam of the first stars at nightfall. That's pretty on the nose about Bryce, if I do say so myself. Esham is not subtle.
Mm-hmm. Still in chapter 10, quote, several people Bryce had known had been killed, all within hours of interacting with her. Because she has the horn on her back and it leaves traces.
In chapter 11, quote, Bryce's leg felt spindly, the old ache in her thigh clawing at the bone. The fact that Bryce never had her leg properly healed ends up being important not only for her character development, but also for the plot. And that's genius.
Yep. Also in chapter 11, quote, there was no predicting where the extra strength that was separating archangels from angels came from. Sometimes it was passed on, usually upon the careful breeding orders of Asteri. Other times it popped up in unremarkable bloodlines. Like Hunt? Just speculation.
You know, just a theory.
Yeah.
Chapter 12. Quote, Hunt's golden breastplate was already being cleaned. The thought of donning the formal armor made him want to puke. Well, it's a good thing he ends up not wearing it.
Last in chapter 12, Micah says to Bryce about Danica, quote, I suspected there might have been a good deal about which she didn't inform you. Ouch, Micah. Like, I know you know, but like, fuck you.
Yeah, fuck you. In chapter 13, when Hunt and Micah talk about finding the murderer, their entire conversation is laced with foreshadowing. Micah says, quote, I want us to find the murderer, not the wolves. Hunt asks, dead or alive? Micah, alive, preferably, but dead is better than letting the person run free. Bryce is the one who finds the murderer, and she's considered a wolf by the end, which is cute. And Micah will be dead. So, yay.
Take that. Last in chapter 13, quote, it had been intentional. Danica and the others, Tertian included, must have been targeted. With Bryce's connection to the latter, a sick coincidence. Bryce toyed with the amulet on the end of her gold chain. Esham mocks us, she laughs at us, and then she spits in our face.
Yep. Let's go on to multiverse thoughts and breadcrumbs. Do you want me to read these to you?
Yeah, go for it.
All right, chapter 8. Bryce has sex with a lion shifter. The Crescent City Fae likely come from Prithian's High Fae, while the shifters likely come from Throne of Glass. For example, Fenris is a wolf shifter, Gavriel is a lion shifter.
Yeah.
But they're also Fae.
Yeah.
And I just brought that up because I thought of it when I read about the lion shifter. Also in chapter 8, Rune's eyes are called Striking Blue, which feels very similar to Crushing Blue, which is what Rhys's eyes are called.
She's getting there. She's getting like there. Warming us up.
Yep. Just like little trickles. In chapter 9, Hunt's battle suit is made of intricate leather scales, and he also has shoulder-length black hair and tan skin, and wings with twin swords peeking above his shoulders. sounds so much like Cassian. Now let me give you the proof. In Akamath, in Mist and Fury, chapter 16, quote, like their High Lord, the males, warriors, were dark-skinned, were dark-haired and tan-skinned. Cassian surveyed Rhys from head to toe, his shoulder-length black hair shifting with the movement. In Mist and Fury, chapter 42, clad in battle black that hugged their muscled forms, their armor was intricately scaled, their shoulders impossibly broader, their faces a portrait of unfeeling brutality. In Wings and Ruin, chapter 22, Cassian was already sizing up the mountain like some opponent. Twin Illyrian blades were crossed over the general's muscled back.
I have nothing to say. You did a great job. Yeah. Yeah.
Like,
we know he's Illyrian. Like, I know it's like we don't know.
Word identical, though.
Yes, absolutely.
Like, how are they not related?
No, I mean, like, that's why when I read it the first time, I was like, these are just the same characters.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because
I thought so too.
Are.
I mean, that's why I never liked Hunt to begin with, because I was like, this is just a Cassian replica.
Right.
In chapter 10, the sign of Griffin Antiquities has a set of glaring owl eyes. Makes me think of Maeve in Throne of Glass and the owl shifter she kept with her to keep her safe. The shifter was a mighty healer said to have been granted powers by the god Silba herself, who happens to be blonde like Jessaba and is represented by owls.
Whoa.
Could Jessaba really be the god Silba, who Aelin banished like all the other gods in the Throne of Glass universe? Jessaba knows Aedas. Could Jessaba or Silba have been banished to hell by Aelin and maybe forged partnerships in order to stay alive? Or, on the other hand, is Jessaba just Valg? Like Maeve.
Wow. Good job.
Thanks. And my last one, in chapter 11, quote, Jessaba's face was both young and wise, bedroom soft yet foreboding. Her pale gray eyes gleamed with glittering magic, alluring and deadly. The contrasts remind me of the Cauldron or the Weaver of the Wood in the Court of Thorns and Roses series. Could they all be connected? Feels like she could be a god or Valg, especially since she calls herself a sorceress, not a witch. Then again, Jessaba has silver nails, maybe like iron nails in the Iron Teeth clan have, who are also witches. Also, in Jessaba's office, where Bryce sits, there is an ironwood desk, and ironwood is the type of wood witches make their brooms from in the Throne of Glass universe.
I feel like you're really ready for whenever we talk to Lily and Rosie.
I am going to be so ready. I am so fucking excited.
You can go back and listen to that episode, actually.
Oh, yeah. We haven't recorded it yet, but it will have aired by the time this airs.
Yep.
All right. What is your Bryce-ism for the week, Jack?
You mentioned your Bryce-ism for the week.
My Bryce-ism is kill him with humor.
Yeah. I think that that's something where it's be saccharine sweet. She did not give up an ounce of her power.
Yeah.
I've been told so many times in my life of like, smile more. You need to be more like this. And she doesn't sacrifice anything.
Yeah.
By weaponizing it.
Yeah. She does not sacrifice herself by leaning into her femininity.
And weaponizing it.
And weaponizing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bryce-ism of the week.
All right. So here's my question, which... Yeah. I don't know how you feel about this, but before we recorded, you didn't like it. Are Bryce and Hunt's motivations for finding the killer as simple as they seem, or is something lurking deep beneath the surface?
All right. I'm going to say yes, because I feel like that's the right answer, because that's why you wrote it.
There are no right answers.
But yet there can be wrong. So, yeah, I think, like, you know, we have the obvious motivations, right? Bryce wants to figure out what happened to Danica, and Hunt wants to know, like, wants to only kill 10 people after this, right? But it also could be a way of searching for each other. I'm not saying that they're doing all this so that Hunt and Bryce can go hang out. There's a kindred spirit there.
Yeah.
And I think these are two very lonely people in a world they don't connect with. And it's almost a way of blocking out a lonely world that they both can't relate to.
Yeah. I actually really love that thought.
I was like, did I get it right?
You did it. No, did I get mean, it right? my thought was completely different, but okay. I want to support your thought.
Thank you.
That these are two individuals who have been lacking connection and lacking purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And this sort of gives them purpose beyond their own selfish motivations. And I say selfish not in a demeaning way, but just because they have self-interest in pursuing the killer. I also think that regardless of, you know, Hunt's motivation to lower his death count and Bryce's motivation to find Danica's killer, we see that both of these individuals are willing and eager to punish themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And in some ways, I feel like searching for this killer who an entire legion couldn't find 2 years ago is, in a way, its own form of self-punishment. It's
impossible.
It's impossible.
And they both know it's impossible.
And Micah knows it's impossible because Micah is the killer.
Yeah, no one's going into this saying they're going to succeed.
Right, right. They're setting themselves up for failure, heartbreak, potential death. And I do wonder to what extent they're doing this because maybe this will give them relief. Mm-hmm. Maybe they'll die. And wouldn't that be preferable in some ways?
Yeah. I mean, both of them are over their life.
Yeah.
You know? So I love it. I think I love both interpretations. Mm-hmm. And it depends on how you want to go about it. I think you can even have both be the answer.
I think so too.
Because, you know, people are complicated and it's more than just one thing. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Book Talk for Book Talk. We encourage you to rate and subscribe to our show on your preferred podcast listening platform. Next week, we'll be exploring chapters 14 through 17 of A House of Earth and Blood.
We would love to hear your thoughts based on today's conversation. You can submit your comments to our form at booktalkforbooktalk.com for a chance to have your feedback discussed during a future mini episode.
If you're enjoying the podcast, please visit our website, booktalkforbooktalk.com, to view our latest merch and learn about supporting the show through Patreon, Ko-Fi, or Venmo. You can also follow us on TikTok or Instagram at the handle booktalkforbooktalk.
Bye.